Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, the rain is a storm.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for June 16th, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on the Open the Voice Gate feed, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on social media at Open Voice Gate. That's both on Twitter and Blue Sky. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says Sponsor This Podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm your host for this week. It's your old pal, Mike Spears. Case Lowe is on assignment and will be back with us next week. And it's going to be a different kind of show this week. First and foremost, I know that my GLAIT reputation is kind of ahead of me at this point. No GLAIT talk on this show. We'll talk about GLAIT 5th anniversary, that's Sonic Wrestling in Ariake. When that kind of happens in a few weeks. But it's going to be a different kind of show going solo. It's going to be a bit of a shorter one. And part of that is that there's just not a lot of Dragon Gate stuff going on. There was nothing on the network this last week. And it's kind of interesting, you know? I mean, feels like the last 3 months or so, it's been like nonstop stuff with Daya, Shima and Magnum Tokyo, Shun. And we're kind of in this kind of weird quiet period. We do have network shows at the end of this week in Hakata, but frankly, there's just not a lot of stuff happening in Dragon Gate for like the first time in ever. So because of that, we're going to do a special kind of thing. I'm calling it the mini mixtape. And in a few minutes, we're going to talk about one of my favorite wrestlers and someone that I think that with the Brave Gate situation being what it is, he, at least his Dragon Gate career, is a little bit back more into focus, and that is the man that Gravity Forgot Pack. So we're going to do what I'm calling a mini mixtape in a few minutes, talk about the news from one of the only shows that Dragon Gate had over this last week that really anything consequential happened, and then we'll close this out talking about those Hakata shows. So on this week, the 14th, Dragon Gate had the first of the Shun Skywalker farewell tour in his hometown show of Toki and Gifu. Two things happened. One of them actually already has a clip on YouTube, which is kind of handy. The other thing I'm wondering if they are going to put up on the network later on, if anything, as like a Shun Skywalker kind of thing. So first and foremost, the thing that wasn't that has not really hit tape or anything. Shun Skywalker's first farewell match happened in his former, in his hometown. He teams with Dragon Kid and fellow Toki Gifu native Mondai Ryu against the Gaja Dokuro team of Madoka Kakuta, Kai, and Jason Lee. And the thing I'm kind of interested in this is that there apparently was like this big, almost babyface Shun Skywalker promo where he actually outright thanks Mondai Ryu for his mentorship early on in the dojo, which sends me thinking like, okay, let's go back, roll the clock back to 2015, 2016. Man, Overgeneration maybe had a little bit more of an impact than we gave it credit for, at least Mondai Ryu in it for the very least. But that is something that I imagine maybe the match might go up on the network sometime. I haven't heard anything, just trying to sift through the tea leaves with this. But the thing that there is a clip of on social media from the Toki show was the semi-main event of Kota Minoura and Luis Monte versus Team 204, the triple tag team champions of Ishin and Yoshiki Kato. And in that match, Minoura wins by DQ after a cookie sheet attack, and a beatdown from Gaja Dokuro was saved by Kota Minoura. The person who saved Kota Minoura from this beatdown was Yuki Yoshioka. So it looks like we already have that kind of direction that we all kind of anticipated, where Yoshioka and Minoura, after D Courage, are kind of gravitating towards each other. Minoura did not accept like a handshake or anything. He stormed off. So this is going to probably slow tease for the rest of the month, and maybe we'll go look at Corrigan. Other stuff that's happened in Dragon Gate, Monday Magic, their big Corrigan show, ending their season with the Monday Magic Three Musketeers of Kaito Kiyomiya, Titus Alexander, and Archie Cole. That's a team that I would like to hear their names announced by Jeff Gerstmann. Jeff Gerstmann should just in general do pro wrestling announcement. I feel like he'd have a fun time saying Monday Magic. Against the mystery team of one New Japan guy, one DDT guy, and one Dragon Gate guy, and that was Zack Sabre Jr. from New Japan, Chris Brooks from DDT, and then Luis Monte from Dragon Gate appearing there. Rita showed up previously on that show, which is making a lot of sense because Rita showed up in Corkin today during the finals, the GHC tag. It's some weird thing, but it's like it's the Noah Tag League, folks. Noah Tag Leagues. And Rita declared a challenge for the GHC Junior Tag Match with Jackie Rita going up against the current champions of Dragon Bane and Alejandro, which we've loved Alejandro when he's appeared in Dragon Gate. I mean, he's essentially a Dragon System wrestler outside of the Dragon System, and Dragon Bane has been great with the Golpadoras and the split there. So that will be something to kind of keep an eye on. I assume that will be happening in Noah, though. It would be a really cool thing and something that I think that Kobe World could use if they were willing to bring in and do the title defense there. I mean, they shouldn't beat Jackie Rita, but if you bring them in there and beat Jackie Rita at Kobe World and have just a face melter of a match, I think everyone would kind of be happy with that. But that's all the Dragon Gate news from this last week. I personally, there's not necessarily been anything about Shun Skywalker. They announced the G1 Climax early field and the playing guys. There was no expectation for Shun Skywalker to just like from what all we've talked about last week, and he wasn't going to just show up and be like surprise Shun Watanabe in the G1. So I don't think there was a surprise there, and we'll just keep an eye out as this farewell tour continues for Shun Skywalker when things might become more clear or at least more open about his departure and where things are going to go from here. But for now, we're done with news. Let's talk about PAC. So a little bit of a preamble before we get into the review content of this episode. It kind of struck me after Roya Tanaka's 11th defense of the Brave Gate title, what he was really accomplishing. And thinking of that, and the fact that with all logic, Roya Tanaka is going to have the greatest Brave Gate ring in history come July 20th. I kind of want to celebrate the guy who, at least as of right now, still holds the oldest record in Dragon Gate, and that is the 11 defense, 447 day Open the Brave Gate run that was done by the man that gravity forgot, Pack. And it's interesting, kind of contrasting these two guys. Tanaka will walk into Kobe World on the July 20th, already breaking his one-year reign mark, which will put him firmly number two in at least the most days had in a reign. And if he gets through Himare, as we've talked about, he still has 82 more days until he breaks PAC's 447-day record. And we talked about the guys he could face with that. But in the ways that matter, at least in Dragon Gate, and I feel like that's fair to say throughout Japanese pro wrestling, it's not that I view the defenses record as usually more prestigious than the days. I mean, we've talked about times that titles have just sat on people's shoulders for a long time. And what PAC accomplished in 2010 into 2011 was quite possibly the greatest title run in company history. And the more I start thinking about PAC, and the more I've thought about like the title run and PAC in general, I've kind of come to a realization, at least in 2026, with what I enjoy in pro wrestling and the wrestling that I watch, with that caveat, because my favorite Dragon Gate guy I've not really watched the match of in almost a decade at this point. But the ones that I consider still active, PAC might be my favorite to watch. And I think that it's something where people nowadays, I think of nowadays people really are on the same page about how great of a wrestler PAC is. And a point that I kind of wanted to go through on this episode, and something that I still will kind of continue doing, is the idea that maybe PAC's greatness started a lot earlier. Maybe his prime wasn't just that Brave Gate title run. Maybe there was something there before it. And I mean, if you think about that, the Brave Gate title run for him lasted from August 29th, 2010 until November 19th, 2011. I think PAC was a great wrestler before then. I've always been a big fan of his. And the older I get and the more deep into his career, the more I kind of have an appreciation of this guy. I mean, he's considered one of the most decent people in an industry of scumbags. And I think that as like his moral compass goes, we kind of saw that he was someone who was willing to take out years of his prime earning potential because he wasn't happy and he didn't agree how he was getting treated. And I find that very admirable. But kind of getting back into this episode and getting back into PAC himself, what I've done is I've picked five not necessarily like B-side PAC matches, but these are matches that I didn't pick Spike Mohicans versus PK1. I didn't actually pick a Ricochet match in this, that I wanted to kind of celebrate his deeper catalog and other parts of that Brave Gate run that weren't just the one-year feud with Ricochet. I feel like that his career was a little bit more deep than that, and that there's some inspiration that I've had. And that is like when we talk on those days and all the discussion about tape trading, like how you consume pro wrestling, one of the ways that, at least for me in my wrestling youth, or however you want kind of want to look at those sorts of things, like I came about in an era that became file sharing and the wrestling music video. And I felt like PAC very much was one of those guys. And part of like the file sharing and music video scene also were like the idea of comp tape and mixtapes. And I vividly remember getting like the Good Helmet sets or like Rob Naylor or Schneider DVDs, Naylor with the Wimpies matches on there. And there's an aspect of curation that just doesn't happen in pro wrestling these days. We just consume. And I mean, a lot of it, if you watch like weekly US wrestling, goes in one ear and out the other. Same thing with like your Road to Dominion shows in Beppu or what have you. But I always thought that there was something kind of cool about the idea of like picking four or five matches and going this. And I know Case has done one where he has compiled a list of 40 or so Shun Skywalker matches. I remember like his like DVD set idea. And I wanted to do something a little bit more grounded and a little bit more kind of exploratory. These five matches are all before Pac leaves for WWE in the summer of 2012. And it is mostly things you will be able to find on the Dragon Gate network. And I'll be sure that both the show notes and the Discord have links to this. One match is, the first match actually is going to be Daily Motion Link, because it's the one match that's not a Dragon Gate proper match. It's actually something that Case and I never really like intentionally like put to the side in like our list of projects and historical work to kind of go back and do. And but it's Dragon Gate UK, and we're going to kick off this pack mini mix, as I'm calling with those, with the first main event from the Dragon Gate UK series of shows, the Dragon Gate European Invasion from November 1st, 2009 in Oxford. And it is the Warriors 5 team of Shima and the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, versus the World 1 team of Naruki Doi, BB Hulk, and Pac. And I'm not going to go blow for blow with these matches, but I'm going to talk about like why I chose this match, some big thoughts about it, and why I think that these matches are kind of important when we like are talking about Pac's career. And I chose this one specifically because Pac enters Dragon Gate in 2007 as a part of Wrestle Jam after working PWG. And his first couple of years are not necessarily ones that I would call distinguished. He's someone that works within Typhoon and then World One, but very much so in his slot and his kind of position. But as the calendar moved into 2009, especially with World One, Pac was able to kind of get a step up where I would argue, at least with like the original five members of World One, Naruki Doi, Masato Yoshino, BB Hulk, Naoki Tanizaki, actually six members because there's MCKZ. And Pac, this is the first unit that moves Pac firmly out of the rookie or bottom lost post kind of position. And he arguably at times was considered the fourth most important member of the unit. Maybe, I mean, with injuries and such, I mean, and like Doi's heel turn, he becomes upwards of the second or third most important person. But the point is that this is a time period where Pac is finally getting highlighted and, elevated, and no better than in the first show of Dragon Gate UK. I always loved how Mark Sloan set up these shows, and I'm some of my misgivings about like not doing Dragon Gate UK stuff is because it's essentially dead media. I assume Sloan owns the rights for all this stuff unless somehow they went over to WWN. But he always has this truss over the ring that has lights on it, so everything in ring is lit really, really well. But the thing that I like is that he, at least on this show, I know he doesn't for some of the other ones, he always has three video screens, one with like the Dragon Gate UK logo, but the ones for the other corners and for the entrance ways. In this match, he had Warriors 5 for Shima and the Young Bucks, and he had the World 1 logo for World 1. And I think that those were the kind of things that were really missing out of Dragon Gate USA. Like, that was a touch and a level of care that you got on these DGUK shows that were missing from the Gabe Sapolsky products. And really, the reason I kind of picked this match is that this is a time period where the Dragon Gate six-man, I mean, we are after the launch of Dragon Gate USA, and it is at a time where the Dragon Gate six-man as a match type is a global quantity. And this one having Pac in it, and especially in the role that in Pac's home country, he is the guy in this kind of match at a time where he's still, I mean, that lower member in World One, that it's just so nice to kind of see him thrive in this kind of role. He has a level of precision in this match that I think is really kind of phenomenal when you think that he only worked parts of the two previous years in Dragon Gate, and it was not like the European schedule that he had was necessarily the busiest one before that. And you already see him really kind of growing into the wrestler that we see today. I wouldn't call this a peak pack match. And as we go through the timeline here, we'll kind of see where he actually slots out for these kinds of things. But I mean, 2009 pack, I mean, he becomes a Triangle Gate champion that we'll talk about in the next match, stepping back kind of into time. But it is really kind of fun to see here. I'm interested in seeing, and part of this is I want to see how we can get more discussion going in like channels on the Discord about these kinds of things. Pac hits a over the corner post Fosbury flop in this match, and in 2009, I don't know how many people are actually doing the Fosbury flop move, and I wonder if this is one of the first ones. I'm certain Lucha, there is certainly kind of someone doing this, but that was something that I made sure I wanted to note here. And then without spoiling a bunch into the match itself, Shima does, without the doubt, one of the funniest kickouts or kickout break or pin breaks that you could see. It actually paused me and made me laugh good a bit. But yeah, no, this is looking at Pac as a star within Dragon Gate. I would argue even more so about more so than the match we're going to talk about next, that like this and this series of shows, and at least like positioning Pac in this kind of manner, that it was already after this DGUK show, like it was clear that Pac was going to be one of the featured people on these series of shows. The next match in our mix is from Kobe World 2009. So we're traveling back in time about 3 months to July 19, 2009, the Open the Triangle Gate title match, Masato Yoshino, BB Hulk, and Pac, the champion team from World 1 defending against Kamikaze of Dragon Kid, Taku Iwasa, and Akira Tozawa. And first and foremost, yes, I found a way to get an Akira Tozawa match onto this comp, and I don't feel bad about that, because at least for me, this is one of the better matches on this show. 2009 Kobe World, kind of a weird one, because you're still you're at the end of, or you're getting close to the end of the Naruki Doi really long Dreamgate run that didn't go so well, and the match against Shima for the Dreamgate and Bravegate was not great here. Twingate was Maraha Sapa as heels against Yamahaka of Shingo and Yamato, and that put a Pac and Akira Tozawa after a mission third from the top here. And it is just a really fun Triangle Gate match, especially you have Masato Yoshino, the most tan that he's ever been in his life. You have BB Hulk at that time period where he really grew out of doing the dance, and he still had to do it and didn't seem like he really wanted to do it at this point. But the magic of this match is between Pac and Taku Iwasa. Taku Iwasa is one of those favorites of mine that, sadly, before like peak Western Dragon Gate viewing, he was basically out of the company and out of wrestling. And it is kind of a shame, because he was a very inventive and creative guy. The Noshigami Gory Bomb was that Shingo does is after him. And him and Pac had really fun chemistry. And that's really kind of the focus in this match. Pac is basically at certain points taking some of the more wild bumps you will see. I mean, no wonder the guy has great chemistry with Darby Allin when he was taking Noshigamis from the apron, hitting his head on the apron to the floor. The one thing about this match, as the world's biggest Akira Tozawa defender, I don't think that it was his best match, and especially given the time period, it kind of makes sense. He's better in the stretch, but it's a little bit of choppiness with him, but the real magic here is really between Pac and Taku Iwasa, and it's a fun to see those two constantly kind of come into it. And I mean, peak Dragon Kid and BB Hulk before he gets beat down, it's just a good time of a Triangle Gate match. And really for Pac, this is his first title run in the company. This is at a time where, as I mentioned before, he's finally starting to get a bit of a push, and it just is a really good feeling a triangle gate match at a time that and on a show that desperately needed it. We are going to fast forward into 2010 for our third match. It's from the Gate of Destiny, 2010. Pac is now Brave Gate champion, and I would argue that the Pac that we would know for virtually the remainder of his career is now fully formed, as I chose this match that he has at Gate of Destiny. It's a Brave Gate defense against Dragon Kid. As I look at Pac and I see, like, if you want to go for like his direct influences, and I think that they are very clear that they are Masato Yoshino and Dragon Kid. And this match really shows off kind of the just natural chemistry that Pac has with Kid. And my two big takeaways from this match and the reasoning why I chose these ones were, I like this time in Dragon Kid's career. It's that time period where you have Team Doi as the heel army. Warriors is kind of looming. And very quickly over the next 2 months, we would have Blood Warriors, and that Blood Warriors in Junction 3 would be off to the races. And in this match, you get Dragon Kid playing a little bit more heel, a little bit more of kind of the veteran, and you get it off the start with a really wild Ultra Hurricanrana that just happens because Pac was showboating, and Dragon Kid's like, no, man, I'm Dragon Kid, and you don't do those things around me. And what this becomes is a battle of precision, and I really, really adore the way that Pac takes the Ranas that he does. It's a Rana-heavy match. It's kind of like Rana versus the 360 Shooting Star, and which one is going to be the one that like fully takes them out and gets them to that point. And Pac, I think, is one of the best people at taking Ranas. And in this match, the way that he takes some of the wild ones that Dragon Kid throws at him is with a level of precision and devastation that makes it really kind of special. But I didn't want to pick any of the Ricochet matches for this comp. I just felt like that it is more interesting to kind of get a little deeper and away from that. And at least for me, this is a Brave Gate match I haven't watched maybe in, I don't know, well over a decade, maybe not a decade and a half, but well over a decade. And it just kind of takes me aback that, like, if you look at Pac from 2009 to 2010, his body is now pretty much fully formed. His wrestling has gotten even more sharper. And you even have a little bit of the edges of the Bastard that you can even see in with 2026 eyes. There are certain things that Pac does in this match that you go, yep, I guess that's where he tapped into when he does those sorts of things nowadays. And it's just such a treat of a match in the first of two Brave Gate matches on this mini mix. Our fourth mini mix match is from Dead or Alive 2011, and it's Pac making his seventh defense of the Brave Gate title against Naruki Doi. Felt like that this one's kind of a fun little nod in here because this defense was the one that broke the previous defense record of Naoki Tanizaki's six defenses and made Pac the high watermark for this title at that time. And it's an interesting time in the promotion for this. So we are a month before the formation of Junction 3 and the actual kickoff in truth of Blood Warriors versus Junction 3 at this point. So we kind of have a bit of a husk of World 1 happening at this point. But PAX 2011, it should not just be remembered for his Brave Gate feud with Ricochet. PAX 2011 is actually a really kind of remarkable year because he becomes the inaugural Open the United Gate champions with Dragon Kid over in Dragon Gate USA as the tournament starts. He actually starts with Masato Yoshino, and then as that champion there. Sorry, Dragon Kid, he becomes Twin Gate champion with across the year. And then he also has this Brave Gate title as well. So going into Kobe World, actually, he was a triple champion this year. They don't ever really carry around USA titles in Japan, which is something that I always kind of found interesting, that they would show more of the Freedom Gate. But the United Gate, I wonder if Gabe kept the United Gate belt and he didn't necessarily let the guys take it back with him, whereas you would have that Freedom Gate being brought back around. So yeah, no, this is actually, we're getting to a point where he is one of the most decorated wrestlers in Dragon Gate. I mean, after the summer, all he had left on the Dragon Gate Grand Slam was the Dream Gate that would come after his WWE stint. But with this, you have Naruki Doi acting every bit of the good heel Naruki Doi and tapping into that against a valiant babyface Pac, and Pac being just like absurdly precise. So 6 months from that last match, and he's even more crisp. He does a standing Cancun tornado to the floor where he lands basically feet first, and he takes one of the nastiest corner cannonballs as well. Just a real tour de force as a babyface. And at least for me, this was one of the matches that I think on the tape it might not be one of the best ones, just because of how the finish kind of goes with it. But it's really taking the step back and looking at packs like 2010, 2011. There's a level of similarity with Roy Itsunaka a little bit with the way that he was presented as the kind of the champion then, and then how it was with Tanaka now. I mean, I guess really the big difference is that Tanaka doesn't have the Dragon Gate defense at this point. The fifth and final match in the mini mixtape for Pac is his first ever Dreamgate shot against Shima from March 4th, 2012 at Champion Gate. And it's just a real kind of study in where this guy goes in essentially 24 to 36 months that he is essentially at this point already challenging to become a Dragon Gate Grand Slam winner and to be the first ever foreigner to have held the Dream Gate title. And for me, rewatching this back, it cemented a couple things and maybe some stuff that I want to pursue on my own about Shima. It's an interesting match where Shima is very accommodating to Pac's kind of style earlier, and then they plug into the typical Shima Dreamgate match. And your mileage might vary on the typical Shima Dreamgate match, but this kind of was one I would say that, though Pac does try to connect selling of the early limb work into his finishing stretch. But like the really cool thing about this match, and something that I dearly miss in modern Dragon Gate, is the seconds and the closing stretch, because this is in that time frame after the conclusion of Blood Warriors and Junction 3, but before the unit shakeup of that year fully kind of took form, where Shima was already a part of We Are Team Veteran or Team Veteran Returns. I always forget which one of those offhand is that, but he's already affiliated. But Pac is with the guys that are that would form World One International, and the way that both Ricochet and Rich Swann just live and die by the near falls. And Ricochet does the thing of getting on the apron and then like on the ropes, and of course on Fuji in the other corner is pitching a fit about that. But it's an interesting match, and it's a display of the sort of explosiveness that I think gets really refined over the stretch of his career that he spends in Dragon Gate from Pac, with just the magnetism. And I mean, what happens when you take that and put it into a big Shima singles match in 2012, and that's really what you kind of get there. And that's what I kind of wanted to do with this episode by and large, and this kind of thing, was get some matches that of someone's career that we talk a lot about, but we don't talk about in certain ways, or we kind of keep him sometimes we keep Pac just in the Bravegate reign, and sometimes we keep Pac just into his return and his Dreamgate title. But I really feel like that he was so much more than that, as at least to me, I feel like he's still the most eminent foreigner in the company's history. This, I mean, it's been 7 years since he's been in the company, but it still kind of feels that sort of way. But hopefully join the Discord if you're not a part of Open the Voice Gate channel, and we could talk about these matches and kind of celebrate a guy who's what felt like was a chiseled in granite record is likely going to come to a close next month. And I thought it would be a good time in this break to kind of take some time and to talk about that. Now, as we close out, let's preview the stuff we have coming up in Dragon Gate in 2026 on the network, and that is the Across Fukuoka doubleheader happening on the 21st. It's I'll say the cards got released today. There's stuff about the cards that I'm super into, and there's stuff about the cards that, you know, I wonder if I could pick and choose. We'd have a much better six-match card out of what we could pick and choose for that. But let's get into it, and I'll give my thoughts. So the show is on the 21st on Sunday. I assume Case and I will be back on next week to review this. We open with Hamare and Kazuma Kimura going up against Yuki Yoshioka and El Cielo. Singles match, Jiroshin Bashi versus Takashi. Six-man tag, Ultimo Dragon, Luis Monte, and Flamita versus Ginki Horiguchi, Hiroyuki. Why is that Hiroyuki? It's Yazushi Kanda. This is just what Google Translate always has. Instead of Yazushi, goes Hiroyuki. But it's Candy. It's Yazushi Kanda and Sachihoko Boy. Match 4, Paradox versus Gacha Dokuro. Yamato, Dragon Kid, BB Hulk, and Susumu Yokosuka versus Madoka Kakuta, Kai, Jason Lee, and Yoshiki Kato. The second singles match is more fallout of Kota Minora's turn as he faces off against Ishin. Interesting, doing this one in Hakata and not in Korakuen, but hey, I guess if we're looking at the fact that we're essentially 5 weeks from Kobe World, we need to get moving towards that Mino Yoshio versus Team 204 match. So having that here. And the main event, we have another 8-man tag. It's Love and Peace versus Natural Vibes, as it's Hyo, Jackie Kamei, Rita, and Mochizuki Jr. versus Strong Machine J, KZ, Gucci, and Aki. I find The fact that Cielo going for a dream key is stuck in under an unaffiliated muck, as I will call like the kind of the situation there, a little bit kind of discouraging. I like seeing Cielo work against Hamare, and I think Kimura is someone that, I mean, if he's not getting attached to Tanaka Gun, I don't know where he's going to go to. I mean, maybe he ends up with like Yoshioka and Cielo and Mino with that. But in the same way, I still kind of feel like a year in, and we should have just put Kimura in Paradox when we had the chance. Don't really have any time for match 2 or 3 on that show. It is kind of a feeling of, oh gosh, we are in Western Japan, so we have to have Ginki Horiguchi, when I thought we kind of escaped that disaster. Moving on to the evening part of the doubleheader, opening with Jackie Kamei versus Kota Minora. 6-man tag, Ultimo, Sachihoko Boy, and Kazuma Kimura versus Ginki Horiguchi, Takashi, and Luis Monte. Rita and Mochizuki Jr. go up against Kai and Yoshiki Kato. Yamato, Dragon Kid, BB Hulk, and Susumu Yokosuka versus Strong Machine J, Flamita, Gucci, and Aki. 4-way, Yuki Yoshioka, Hyo, Hamare, and Jason Lee. Could also see some Minora involvement in that. And we get a Dream Key preview match as KZ and Cielo will be teaming up against the Gacha Dokuro team of Madoka Kakuta and Ishin. And I have to say, I like the evening card a little bit more. I do feel like that it will be kind of a test, which is a better match between the Love and Peace and Natural Vibes match on the first show versus the pre-intermission match against Paradox on this one. 4-way tag feels weird. Or that 4-way singles match feels weird in match 5, and that just makes me raise my eyebrow and wonder what we're doing here. And yeah, it's like situationally, there's things I really like on the afternoon show, and I do think that it's good to have that KZ and Cielo bit, at least in the evening show. But I guess if I put it on a 1 to 10 scale, probably about a 5.5. 5.5, maybe 6, but that might be saying I'm a little bit too excited than I actually really am. But I think that's going to do it on this abbreviated VoiceGate. Thanks for everyone for sticking with us this week. Hopefully the pack mini mixtape is a interesting enough little side quest that we had today. And if y'all like it, I will try to find more stuff on the network to do things like this on like slow weeks and like not necessarily full heavy historical shows, but you know, just getting into the network and seeing what they have. I mean, a little frustrating that the champion gates are like not easily accessible. Like it just feels kind of weird to me that you go in the big match tab and champion gates not always there, and that kind of bums me out. But that's going to do it this week on Open the Voice Gate. You can follow me on Twitter at Fujihei of Two Eyes, like Don Fuji. Case is _ in your case. There's also the Open the Voice Gate Twitter account at Open Voice Gate. It's the same thing on Blue Sky. But want to underline the best place to really keep up with Open the Voice Gate is on the Voices of Wrestling Discord, especially in that Open the Voice Gate channel, as well as the Dragon Gate channel as well. But for Case, I'm Mike. I will talk to you all again next week. Take care, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? And are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.